All right, on top of a roof. Oh man. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Better Than Food Book Reviews. I'm your host, Clifford Lee Sargent, and I'm on top of this dilapidated building in Chinatown, in the middle of Soho. And, it is a beautiful, beautiful day. It was 9 degrees a couple days ago, and now it's somewhere maybe in the 50s. Or maybe mid-40s. This is the weirdest weather I've ever experienced in my life. Anyways, so I'm gonna do this the best I can walking around here, you know, without a, I don't have a tripod with me, so I figured I'll just, you know, do, you know, what I can. But I just thought, you know, it's a nice day, nice view, and I'm very excited to tell you about this book. I'm very excited to revisit Emile Cioran, or Cioran, or however you would like to pronounce it. The French call him Cioran, you know, and he spent most of his life, you know, since the age of 26, I think, over in France, so I guess, you know, the proper pronunciation would be Cioran, but they also say Cioran, you know, because he's Romanian. So, you know, one of the very first video reviews I ever did was, one of the very first reviews I ever did was actually The Trouble with Being Born, which was a collection of aphorisms by Cioran. And I would really like to explore him further because I didn't do a very good job. I won't make excuses, but for, let's just say there's much more to him that wasn't even hinted at in that video. So. And I was exploring the joyful side of his, you know, his pessimism in the sense that, often it can be very humorous, but, it's also meant to be taken quite seriously. Cioran went over to Paris, to study, I think on a scholarship or something, and he was hanging around, you know, the cafes with, Sartre and, Simone de Beauvoir, you know, lighting her cigarettes, as Eugene Thacker mentions in the foreword to this fantastic, fantastic book. And he was a quiet sponge, you know, he was soaking everything up, he was writing at night, but nobody really knew until much later. So yeah, he was writing, he was constantly writing at night, constantly filling these notebooks, and several collections of essays are published, and this is a fantastic collection of essays called The Temptation to Exist. While Cioran's prose, Thacker writes that they contain an acerbic wit and lyricism reminiscent of the early Nietzsche and the later Schopenhauer. And I'm not familiar with Schopenhauer's work, actually. But I am very familiar with Nietzsche, and I can certainly attest to that description. Thacker goes on to say that, you know, in so much as this book has a theme, the theme is that it's that to exist is to be tempted to exist, you know, to exist in time, to exist with a plan, to exist in our own human-centric world of our own making or destruction, propelled towards an unseen world and pining for a lost or non-existent past. Sounds like Thacker. But this is great. He writes, if Cioran is a pessimist, it's because he refuses to place his faith in human beings, let alone, you know, God or science. And this alone distinguishes him from his existentialist colleagues, you know? Always at a distance, but always within hearing range. Basically, Siron doesn't rage in the usual sense in his writings. You know, there aren't really many exclamation points like Nietzsche, if you get my drift. But you know, Thacker's description is great because Siron isn't actually calling a lot of attention to himself. You know, he's not walking around in the street with a giant, you know, repent sign. Far from it. He's just always in the distance. Now, he's much more of a quiet man who likes to keep to himself in the corner while drinking his wine, but he's taking everything in, right? And then he'll just drop these little pieces of information that may, on first hearing, sound maybe slightly cynical, but and you might dismiss it at first, but they're so coherent, they're so thought out, that they'll stay with you. You'll leave the bar after you heard him speak, and then when you're on the verge of sleep, you'll have that jolt, like you're having that moment where you feel like you're falling and all of your muscles spasm, and you'll just wake up, and because something he'll have said will have stuck. It's not easy to dismiss Siron if you understand him, or if you take him seriously. You'll find something like that has this weight that's like totally tragic, but at the same time there's this really humorous feeling to it, you know, this occasionally humorous feeling. Occasionally humorous like my fucking hair. And sometimes kind of like strangely optimistic. Does that make sense? Optimistic pessimism? It's certainly beautiful. I mean, in a very human sense. I mean, it is really fundamentally beautiful writing. And depending on you ask, he might be the biggest optimist around. Rather than this feeling of impossibility, what you get from Siron, I'm gonna fuck that up, what you get from Siron is this feeling of total possibility, right? You know, this wasn't a man who was incapable of smiling. This was a man who could laugh, you know. This was a man who had a beautiful wife who seemed to have loved him and whom the feeling was mutual. He wasn't as isolated or dark or dramatic, you know, as I think many people would like to peg him on a superficial reading or a superficial glance. You know, he was very much human, and he knew this, you know. But on the other hand, though, you know, according to Wikipedia, his mother once said that, or he relayed this in an interview, his mother once said that if she knew how unhappy he was going to be, she would have aborted him, which he loved. So yes, rather than the feeling of impossibility, there's the feeling of total possibility. Total possibility. Like when you, there's that moment of excitement when you feel the autonomy, right? There's this moment of excitement when you feel all of the autonomy that you possess, where you are given a say, where you are in fact given all the say, you know? If you choose to chain yourself to another and their ideas, or to be intellectually lazy, to regard your fate as inevitable and determined by some sort of like divine doobity-doo, by all means, what it usually refers to is that you are simply bored. Your life is boring because you are a boring human being. Human beings are boring. Most of life is spent attempting to escape boredom. In that same interview where he was talking about his mom, he was also saying, you know, my life is inconceivable without ennui. And the interviewer asks, you know, why is that? And he says, because of old age. With old age, things lose their intensity, so everything that's good and everything that's bad gain in depth, but not on the surface, if you like. But you don't find that there are things that gain in intensity with old age? No. One doesn't become better on a moral plane with old age, or wiser, contrary to what people think. One gains nothing in getting old. But one is more tired. One gives the impression of wisdom. And that's hysterically funny to me in a black comedy kind of sense, you know? Because there's such a fuckload of truth to that. The whole notion that we should expect those who are older than us to be fundamentally wiser or smarter, you know, is 100% bullshit. It's actually amazing how much better I feel some days after reading some Siron, you know? I mean, the expectation, I think, among most people is that you'd want to kill yourself, but... And granted, you know, Siron entertained the notion of suicide quite a bit in his life, you know, and, but it's sort of like my friend says, you know, he said, I don't think I've had one really true good friend who has not at least at one point in their life seriously contemplated suicide. I love that because it's true in the sense that if you've really considered pushing your thought, you've considered pushing it as far as it will possibly go, you know, limits be damned. And 20th century French authors seem to do this better than anyone else, you know. Certainly Socon, you know. But I don't know, maybe one day I'll change my tune. The wonderful Susan Sontag gives an excellent introduction to the book where she is describing a little bit of Sirhan's politics, and she says that he must be, you know, considered a conservative politically, you know, because liberal humanism for him is simply not a viable or interesting option at all. And the hope of a radical revolution is something to be outgrown by the mature mind, you know. Thus, speaking of Russia in A Little Theory of Destiny, which is one of the essays in this collection, he remarks, "The aspiration to save the world is a morbid phenomenon of a people's youth." And I'm certainly right there with him on all accounts, I must admit. Once he refers to history as a man's aggression against himself. And I'm actually going to continue and review Sirhan's works all throughout my life. His mind is so interesting that I need to learn about three new languages to actually describe, you know, and poorly at that, you know, how I really feel about it. So now I'll read a few pieces from this particular volume for all y'all regarding those who have claimed to have found salvation, or those who are kind of like taking upon this holier-than-thou stance. He says, "For at any price we must keep those who have too clear a conscience from living and dying in peace." Comparing the Tao Ching to Rimbaud and Nietzsche, he claims the Tao goes further but hasn't destroyed itself in the process. It has no delirium to propose, right? So the former's actually engage you, Rimbaud and Nietzsche, they actually engage you in their danger, right? The only minds which seduce us are the minds that have destroyed themselves trying to give their lives meaning. I mean, what an atomic bomb of a beautifully fucking composed sentence. If he wasn't so, you know, if he wasn't a fantastic writer, you know, if he wasn't so, like, economical and balanced and clever with just enough black humor to make him charming, you know, we'd never have the courage to listen to him, you know, or the attention span, I don't think. And that's the brilliance of Sirhan, you know. Or maybe I should say we'd never be seduced, you know, because Sirhan is, in fact, seductive. He's understood the importance of the quality of seduction in writing about topics such as these, topics this volatile. You know, it's essential, you know. I mean, like, remember what Oscar Wilde said in one of his books. It's absurd to divide people into good or bad. You're either charming or you're tedious. I'm sure I fall into the latter. All right, just a few more here. From On a Winded Civilization. "The wrinkles of a nation are just as visible as those of the individual." From The Advantages of Exile. "Let us say a man writes a novel which makes him overnight a celebrity. In it he recounts his sufferings. His compatriots in exile envy him. They too have suffered, perhaps more, and the man without a country becomes, or aspires to become, a novelist. The consequence, an accumulation of confusions, an inflation of horrors, of frissons that date. One cannot keep renewing hell, whose very characteristic is monotony, or the face of exile either. Nothing in literature exasperates a reader so much as the terrible. In life it is too tainted with the obvious to rouse our interest. But our author persists. For the time being he buries his novel in a drawer and awaits his hour. The illusion of a surprise, of a renown which eludes his grasp, but on which he reckons, sustains him. He lives on unreality. Such, however, is the power of this illusion, that if, for instance, he works in some factory, it is with the notion of being freed from it one day or another by a fame as sudden as it is inconceivable. To attack God, to seek to dethrone him, to supplant him, is an exploit in bad taste. the performance of an envious man who takes a vain satisfaction in coming to grips with a unique and uncertain enemy. Whatever form it takes, atheism presumes a lack of manners, as does, for converse reasons, apologetics. For is it not an indelicacy as well as a hypocritical charity, an impiety to do battle in order to sustain God, to assure him, whatever the cost, a longevity? The love or the hate we bear him reveals not so much the quality of our anxieties as the grossness of our cynicism. Beware, you might argue, beware what you call a failure of manners. You are only denouncing atheism the better to sacrifice it. Upon myself, I am only too aware of the stigmata of my time. I cannot leave God in peace. Along with the snobs, I entertain myself by repeating that he is dead. As if that had any meaning. But such impertinence we hope to dispatch our solitudes and the supreme phantom which inhabits them. In reality, as they increase, they merely bring us closer to what haunts them. There is only one thing worse than boredom, and that is the fear of boredom. And it is this fear that I experience each time I open a novel. I would love to continue more up here, but I think I can't really feel my hands anymore, so I'm going to read the very last paragraph from this collection of essays, and I'll leave you to decide if it's for you or not. After having made of death an affirmation of life, having converted its abyss into a salutary fiction, having exhausted our arguments against the evidence, we are ambushed by stagnation, depression. It is the revenge of our accumulated bile, of our nature, of this demon of common sense, which, allayed for a time, awakens to denounce the ineptitude and the absurdity of our will to blindness. A whole past of merciless vision, of complicity with our ruin, of accustoming ourselves to the venom of truth, so many years of contemplating our remains in order to extract from them the principle of our knowledge. Yet we must learn to think against our doubts and against our certitudes, against our omniscient humors. We must, above all, by creating for ourselves another death, one that will be incompatible with our carrion carcasses, consent to the undemonstrable, to the idea that something exists. Nothingness may well have been more convenient. How difficult it is to dissolve oneself in being. How difficult it is to dissolve oneself in being. Well, guys, like I said, I wish I could have done it longer, but I'm sort of really fucking cold. I hope this worked out relatively okay. My arm really... Yeah. Thank you very much for watching. Please check out E.M. Sehon. He's absolutely incredible. There will be more of him on this channel as soon as I can get to it. Really enjoyed The Temptation to Exist and all the people who have recommended him to me more and more and more. Really enjoyed The Temptation to Exist. You know, enjoyed. Thank you to everybody for watching. Thank you very much for watching. Really appreciate it. If you haven't subscribed, I mean, hop on board. No end in sight. Yeah. Always remember what Sirron said. Without Bach, God would be a completely second-rate figure. And speaking of God, always remember the Gospel of John. If you go home with somebody and they don't have books, don't fuck them. Have a great day, guys. Ciao.